From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Andy Richards.
Melanie Stevens.
And welcome to Defrag Tools. This is part two of a very special episode of Defrag Tools, where we have a guest talking about garbage collection. And what are we going to continue with this week?
So last week we talked about some basic stuff, you know, a few basic commands in SOS. And this week I wanted to talk a little more about doing performance work and what is an efficient way to do that so you can get the most out of your time, and show a couple more commands under Debugger.
Cool. Jump back into it.
Yeah, so this is where we're left with from last time. So what we have here is we just stopped at the end of a Gen 2 GC, and we dumped the heap there. So the reason why I mentioned this in the last show, why we would want to do this, is you want to have a consistent way to measure your managed heap, because you don't want to happen to measure right before full GC and right after full GC, you could get, wildly very variable results that way. So we can say what people do, like inside of Microsoft, is, they would have a performance suite, right, that they run every day, and they would go and measure at the end of a GC and just to have consistent results. The way they do that, because some teams can set, conditional breakpoints like we did in the last show. Some teams just say, like, because I'm just running a test, I'm just going to trigger a full GC at the end of my iteration, each iteration, and I'll measure the heap size right there. So, because there's not much, obviously the results there, you could argue, is not completely accurate like you would in the debugger, but because they know that there's not much happening with their test at that point.
So basically, because the test is dormant, it's a
semi-consistent
point.
Right. So you can say, I'm going to trigger Gen 2 GC, and after that Gen 2 GC returns, I'm going to measure the heap size. Mm-hmm. So that's actually a very good way of measuring the managed heap size.
Can a program do it to itself? Like, can, if you're inside of a CLI program, can you read the current GC sizes yourself?
You mean outside of the process?
No, within the process.
You can call, there's a gc.collect method that you can call.
Can you get the sizes, though?
Yes, you can call get total heap size, and that will give you actually what the objects would take, the amount of space the objects would take up on the heap, without the free objects that we talked about last time. Because what people, when they do that, what they really care about most of the time is to say, like, how much space does my my memory usage consist of, right? If there's fragmentation, which fragmentation on managed heap means the free objects on managed heap, right? They don't really care about that much, because it's mostly GC's job to manage the fragmentation on the heap for you.
Because that's like a defrag.
Sure, yeah, exactly. So, this week, I wanted to talk more about doing performance work, because I feel like I've seen a lot of people sort of, they spend a lot of time and they're trying, with good intentions, right? They say, we really want to have good performance for our managed application. So one thing I see that people sometimes would do is they would sort of jump right at the first set of perf data they see, and they try to draw a conclusion where the problem might be, then they would go down that path. Mm-hmm. But that may not necessarily be the right path, right? So, like, sometimes I would hear people say, like, I see my allocation rate is really high. It's like 200 megs per second. I think that's very high. I better go look to see, like, what objects I'm allocating and reduce it there, right? And it turned out that's not really a problem, because if you're simply just allocating 200 megs per second temporary objects, let's say, it's not a problem with the, hardware that we have.
It's a churn that we can
Right, it's handle. Something that we can handle with no problem. But if you say, I'm going to survive a lot of memory, and I'm wondering why GC is taking up so much time when my process is running, that's a valid thing, right?
You think a lot of people make the mistake between temporary objects and long-lived objects in their analysis?
That plus the point I'm trying to make is that, you should have a good, sort of a good basic or fundamental understanding of where the cost comes from, instead of drawing a quick conclusion off of some performance data that may or may not be the right thing to do. So there's something that I want to, that I tell everybody that I talk about performance to, is that there's two things that you want to understand when you do managed memory work, right? Number one is that you care about how often GCs are triggered, right? That you always care about that, because as soon as GC is triggered, that means kind of your threads don't really get to run anymore, right? Unless we do a concurrent or background GC, which we'll get into later. But if we just assume that you're only doing what I call blocking GCs, that means this is a time that GC has to take away from your process and your code does not get to run, right? Mm-hmm. So you really want to care about, like, how often do GCs happen in my process? So that is decided by when GC do a collection, right? It would observe how much space it'll get back. So let's say I'm doing a Gen 1 GC, right? So before Gen 1 GC, GC observes there's this types of objects and they have together, they take up this much space. And then after GC, I observe like some types are probably gone, some types are still there but with fewer instances. And then I get another value of the total space they take up, right? So I can see like how much I survived, then I can decide then when I should trigger the next GC. So, you know, if you think about it from that point of view, then you understand it's actually the garbage that GC finds that would dictate the cadence of the GC, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say, you know, I just allocate a bunch of stuff that survives. GC goes and collects it and say, like, you know, it's not very useful. Like, why should I be doing collection? I'm not getting anything back, right? Yeah. It's not going to do a GC for a long time. Or when I say time, I really mean how much allocation you're doing, that sort of thing. It's not time as in wall clock time, right? Yeah. So I think understanding that is extremely important, because often I see people, you know, they just, I mean, I'm not saying this is a non-valid approach. I'm saying, like, after you've gone through the obvious approaches, this is something that you want to think about, right? Mm-hmm. It could be the case that when I randomly go to my managed heap and take a heap snapshot shot and I'm very surprised and I say, like, oh, these objects, they shouldn't be there, but they're there. Let me get rid of them. And suddenly my performance got a lot better. It obviously could happen, right? But I'm saying, like, after you've gotten rid of the obvious stuff, like what to do next, right? So this is the things that you want to keep in mind.
So people, if they maybe take a dump file and see this massive number and go, you know what, that really should be collected faster, and they go and put a whole lot of GC collects in their code when they destroy object X, that's probably not the right approach. They probably misdiagnose the situation and then jump to a conclusion that it's probably detrimental.
Or you could have a situation where you're saying, like, oh, I'm, you know, seeing in my snapshot, I do have a bunch of objects that, that, you know, I think they shouldn't be there, you know, like, but if I can, I mean, it's always good to get rid of objects, right? But let's say, you know, you're doing mostly Gen 1 GCs, right? So you really care about the Gen 1 GC performance. So I want to say, you know, when you see a Gen 1 GC happen, you want to say, oh, let's see what Gen 1 GCs get rid of. So if I want my Gen 1 GCs to happen less frequently, I need to make sure that Gen 1 GCs don't just keep finding garbage, right? Either it finds garbage and I don't, you know, keep putting garbage in it anymore, therefore it wouldn't be triggered. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I can just say, or I could say, like, oh, I'm good with that, right? And that's totally by design, and Gen 1 GCs usually don't take that long, and I'm okay with the result.
So if you think that it shouldn't be getting to Gen 1, you might make deliberate decisions in your code to try to get them to be destroyed faster so that they clean up in Gen 0 instead.
Right. So Gen 1 acts as a buffer between Gen 0 and Gen 2, obviously, right? So what that says is Gen 1 is really, if we talk about this from, let's use server GC or server workload as an example, right? So let's say I'm handling a bunch of concurrent requests, right? Gen 1 GC's purpose really is just to hold the memory that's in the current, you know, the in-flight request. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I happen to do a GC in the middle of request. You know, GC has no concept about your requests, right? So it would just, you know, when it wants to happen, it'll trigger one, and you obviously have an in-flight request. So the memory that you've allocated for the in-flight request, that's going to survive by design. Yeah. And that's okay, right? But if you see, like, I've had cases where people say, like, oh, I still, you know, I think my request, like, my 10,000 requests are gone, like the 10,000 of this type of objects I allocate, they should all be gone, but they're all still there. So that's a problem, right? So that's where, like you said, you know, you want to make sure that the objects that they should have been collected in Gen 0, they don't survive and get into Gen 1.
So I guess if people are implementing some type of caching, they might want to review their caching model because it's maybe keeping stuff they don't want around. And we can probably talk about pinning and routing later.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
But yeah, it's unexpected pinning, I think, is more the issue rather than deliberate.
Right, yeah. So that's one thing I wanted to mention. So, you know, how often GCs are triggered, that's something you want to care about and you want to understand so you know how to make a trigger or not trigger, right? Mm-hmm. Another thing is like when a GC actually happens, how long that GC takes, that part is dictated by how much you survive. So, you know, if I survived more memory this time, then it's not surprising that this GC would take longer than the last GC that happened, mm-hmm. right? So I think those two things, they will tell you exactly how my percent time in GC is a value it is now, right? So that's a very, I think that's one of the most important things that when I talk about performance work that people, I would really like them to understand and say, like, when I do performance work, this is what I'm going to focus on. Mm-hmm. So last time we talked about how to stop at the end of a GC. So how do you stop? You know, since we talked about the number one point, which is, you know, what GC, like how often GCs are triggered are dictated by the garbage that you find, right? So you would expect, like, you know, if I stop right before a GC, on entry of a GC, and I take a look at my heap, and then I take a look at my heap again right after the GC is done, the difference there, that's what determines the cadence, right? Yep. So how do we decide, or how do we stop at the beginning of a GC, right? So last time we talked about the suspend EE, so that's a counterpart of restart EE. But unfortunately, when you call suspend EE, you don't know what generation of GC you're going to do, right?
Yep.
So at that point, it's, you know, the generation is just not really decided. So you really want to stop at the point where GC has figured out what generation is going to collect, but it hasn't collected yet.
Yeah.
Right? If it's already collected, then you're too late. So there's a convenient SOS command that allows you to do that.
Oh.
It's actually part of a not very obvious command. So if I do help in SOS, there is a, let's see. Find. So there's a find the roots command. So we haven't talked about GC roots yet, but one of the questions that people usually ask is like, you're telling me that this object is live, what's holding on to it, right?
Yeah.
So there's a GC root command that helps you do that. But because it's not necessarily that, you know, your object is live because of a user visible root. User visible root means something that you created or, mm-hmm. or the framework created on your behalf, right? So let's say I create a GC handle. That is a root, right? So that's something that GC root command can help you find. But if I say this object is live because it's in Gen 2, and it's in Gen 1 and it's held live by a Gen 2 object, and I'm not doing a Gen 2 GC. If I'm not doing a Gen 2 GC, that means everything in Gen 2 is considered live because
uh-huh.
they're going to be there right after my Gen 1 GC. So I do a Gen 1 GC, obviously I have to take into consideration that objects are held live by the Gen 2 objects. So that, you know, GC root doesn't take care of for mm-hmm. you. So then we added this command, I think in 4.0, that helps you find what I call the GC internal roots, which means objects are live because they're held live by their older generation objects. So conveniently enough, because we have to know that, we have to provide a way for people to say, I want to stop at the next Gen 1 GC because I'm interested in investigating Gen 1 GCs, not full GCs or random GCs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you do help on this command, it tells you that there's instruct the runtime to stop and the next time it collects the generation that you want.
Yeah. I'm going to do a shout out to Lee Culver who writes SOS. He does a great job.
Yeah. So if I do just exactly what the command help tells me, so now it says, you know, I'm going to stop on the next Gen 1 GC and before the collection happens.
Mm-hmm.
So if I go here, then it'll see it throws an exception. That's how we implement the mechanism inside of the runtime. So if I do a...
You can see the text up here, the CLR notification.
Yeah, it says GC performing Gen 1, you know, collection determined surviving objects. So it says at this point, so what this really, when this command really happens, like, right here when we stop, if we do a call stack here, so it actually it's in the mark phase. Mark phase is the phase that GC does as a first stage of a collection where it finds all the live objects. So at this point, it hasn't actually done anything with the dead objects yet.
Mm-hmm.
So this command, actually, the exception happens at the end of the mark phase.
So that command like sets some type of flag inside the GC, and the GC goes, oh, if that flag's set, I'll throw an exception right here. Normally, I wouldn't throw it.
Exactly, right. So it would detect that, you know, you're waiting for this notification from me.
It's kind of like you inserting a breakpoint into the code.
Basically,
it's just,
that's
just
what it
a
is. But, you know, this is nice because you don't need symbols, right? You can you know, it's very nice that way.
Yeah.
So at this point, this is exactly what we wanted. You know, we just stopped at the sort of on entry of GC, but GC has done a bunch of work in the mark phase, but hasn't destroyed anything yet.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were to do a dump heap command here, then this is what the current objects are alive. So some of these will be determined by GC as not live anymore. So the following phases, they will collect them.
Mm-hmm.
So now if I do my, actually, let me just do this. Instead of doing the conditional breakpoint, because now we got a call stack right here. And last time we mentioned that this guy is the entry point into the GC work. So if I'm just going to go to the return address of it, that means
the function, that it will
the function, you know, GC would have been done.
So that's the line of code after the call to that function. So once the function's finished.
Yeah. Right. It's very slow because I think it's trying to do something with the resolve the symbols.
Yeah.
So actually, we stopped here because we still have that restart EE breakpoint set, which is okay because restart EE is where it stops too. So then, if I do a dump heap stat here again, then we see we got 889 objects, and we used to have 1399 objects. So GC got rid of 500 objects. So if you compare, sometimes this is really obvious to people. Like if I show them the before and after, they say like, oh, yeah, these objects, like, they shouldn't be here, or these objects, I don't even know where they came from. They shouldn't exist in the first place. So then they get to the root of the problem pretty quickly.
So based on the information in a debugging session like this, or maybe a dump file, can you actually find out the line of code that allocated the object, or is that something you have to use this external tool for?
That you'd have to use an external tool for, because we don't track in the allocation call stack is way too expensive. We don't do that by default.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for example, you could use CLR Profiler. It would hook up to the profiling, the allocation callback thing, so it knows exactly when the object's allocated.
Yeah, so of course,
a lot of overhead.
So you launch the program with that tool, and then it tracks everything, and then you get...
If you tell it to do so, yes.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the... And as we mentioned, that, you know, these 889 objects, that's what decides how long this GC took. Because you want to, you know, sometimes people say, like, well, I don't think the total time of GC, time that GC spends is a problem for me. That value is very low. But I do care when this long GC happens, because it may, you know, if it's more than this many milliseconds, it may make me lose my, you know, service contract or make me time out. And obviously, they don't want that, right? So in that case, they would, you know, do the exit on GC command. They would look at the output and say, like, what survived there? Because what survived there is what determined that, you know, your GC took this long.
So is there a command that will show you which gen each object is in?
Yes, there's a GC where command. So let's just dump heap empty. Let's do something that's, how about the object array objects? And then if I do GC where on it. So GC where is actually just a convenience command per se, because, you know, you could, if you look at eheap-gc output, you already know where the generations are.
Okay.
So you could do it yourself that way. But, you know, we want to make it easier. So we have this command, and this says, you know, it's in gen 3. It's not very lined up, but
yeah.
This says gen, which is a large object heap.
Awesome.
And if I do eheap-gc, and it tells you that, I wanted to talk a little bit about the, you know, sort of the physical representation of the managed heap. So it's got two segments here. So manage heap consists of a bunch of heap segments, because when GC reserves a memory on your behalf, we don't reserve a little bit, because that would be not very efficient, right? Mm-hmm. We want to reserve a big chunk of it. Actually, nowadays on 64-bit for server GC, we reserve very large
big
segments.
Chunks.
Yeah, very big chunks. So then,
and that, right, and that has changed over the .NET versions?
That also has changed. So that's not a value that people should rely on. We even changed it in service packs before. Initially for server GC, like, we have for 32 bits, right? Before 64-bit came online, we only had 32 bits, and we had smaller segments. But when 64-bit came, because it's efficient for GC to reserve a large amount of space, right? So at least other people will not use it, right? We don't commit until we need to use it.
Yeah.
But the reservation should be done in larger chunks.
So you know you've got a contiguous space.
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, in here, we got two segments, right? One is what's on the small object heap, and one is the large object heap.
We haven't talked about large object heap. Why does that exist?
Large object, because when you have larger objects, our threshold right now is 85,000 bytes. So if you have 85,000 byte object or larger, it'll get to go on the large object heap. Because when we compact, when we move objects around, it's very expensive to copy very large objects. So we keep them on the larger side of the heap, and we don't actually compact it. But it doesn't mean we don't clean it up. It just means that we sweep it.
So you can get fragmentation heap. Where
right. But people normally, they do have this concept. They say, because you don't compact, obviously I would have fragmentation problems. But what GC does is actually it would group the adjacent dead objects into a big free object. Mm-hmm. And when you say, I want to allocate a large object, it would actually use those free spaces to accommodate the allocation requests. So it's not the case that just because I don't compact, I will have fragmentation issues.
Yeah.
And we've made a bunch of improvement for large object heap in 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
You can find it on our team blog. In this case, we have, this is where Gen 2 starts. So Gen 2 is always at the lower end of the segment. So it's, if Gen 2 is on the same segment as Gen 0 and Gen 1, its address is always going to be in the low side. And then after Gen 2, then we have Gen 1 and Gen 0. So Gen 1 and then Gen 0 in that order. Of course, Gen 2 starts because I could have multiple Gen 2 segments, right? There's the segment we have right here, we call this the ephemeral segment. So you can see it here. Ephemeral segment means that where Gen 0 and Gen 1 live on. So Gen 0 and Gen 1, they always, for the same heap, they always live on the same segment. We do that for performance reasons. So this is what we call the, because there are four ephemeral generations, we call this particular segment the ephemeral segment. And if you have enough data that makes GC want to expand the heap, right? So GC says, okay, I have enough data now, I want to acquire another segment. So then it would use that segment it acquired as a new ephemeral segment. So that's where Gen 0 and Gen 1 will start on. And then Gen 2 will be at the older segment. So you could have these multiple Gen 2 segments, right? In that case, then Gen 2 start is not going to be on the same segment as Gen 0 and Gen 1.
Yep. So should people be worried about how many segments there are, or is it just a complete manifestation of how we...
I think people, usually you don't have to worry about how many segments you have. I think this is more just for debugging purpose. And
understanding that it's not contiguous space
right.
for the whole gen.
There's where people, they would actually need to worry about, like I've seen some from, some field cases where people say like, I have too many segments because it's fragmenting my virtual address space, right? Because, mm-hmm. If you have all these segments around, then, your virtual address space is going to get fragmented. Mm-hmm. And that was a problem when we're in the 32-bit world. Like, today I actually don't see that many 32-bit applications anymore. Mm-hmm. So in 64-bit, the reserve space is not really a problem.
It's relevant.
I mean, my personal opinion is, you always want to care about it, right? It's just a matter of how much do you care. It's if this is not, in 64-bit, it's just not as big of a concern anymore.
It's not fatal, but it's...
Right. I mean, it may be more... It may make more sense for me to focus my time on something else. But on, in 32-bit world, people really needed to care because they only got 2 or 3 gigs or 4 if they go to the WoW 64 and 64-bit. So they really want to care. So we actually added this feature called VM hoarding for... I think we added it in 2.0. So this was added mostly for ASP.NET at the time. So ASP.NET said, you know, we use server GC and we just think that, you know, our virtual address space is getting fragmented. Mm-hmm. So what this feature says is when I acquire a segment, I actually will not let the reserved space go. So, you know, when even though there's no live objects that live on the segment anymore, in which case GC would normally release the segment, right? We would actually call virtual free on it. But if you have this feature turned on, we would say, let's decommit the whole thing so we don't take up the physical storage space, but let's keep the segment space reserved.
So it returns to reserve instead of returning to free, so you still have...
So next time, right? So next time when you need a new segment, we would actually pick from the list that we have reserved.
So you're being memory efficient, but without being memory dangerous. You want to call it that?
Right, yeah. Like without actually taking up the, you know, the physical storage,
yeah.
Right? Which is, you know, another
system commit. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So so that's something. So ASP.NET actually has that on by default.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that we did to help with the VM fragmentation part of things. Yeah.
So fragmentation will turn up in what ways? Will you see out of memory errors, or
yeah, basically fragmentation. If you let, you know, if you continuously have fragmentation, right? If the fragmentation keeps growing and growing, then eventually it will be out of memory.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are out of memory, you would see that my heap is mostly, or a lot of it, is taken up by these free objects, right? Which means they're not even storing the useful data for me.
Mm-hmm.
Fragmentation can come in various ways. So if we, let's say we haven't talked about background GC, but let's just say, you know, if we do a GC that does not compact, mm-hmm. right, background GC doesn't compact. So background GC actually makes fragmentation on the heap for you. And this is, hopefully, you know, we're making good fragmentation. It means that, you know, when we promote something from gen 1, right, we do a gen 1 GC and we survived a bunch of stuff and we want to fit these in the fragmented parts in gen 2. Right, so I make these free objects in Gen 2, then I say it's not just there, you know, being useless, right?
Mm-hmm.
I actually will use it next time I need to accommodate some survivors from Gen 1. So that's sort of what background GC does, right? And then what we want to do is we want to sustain that mode. So background GC will go and make a bunch of free objects, and then we want to, you know, kind of sustain in that mode so we can keep promoting stuff from Gen 1 and we don't run out of free space.
That's very clever.
Yeah. And of course, you know, if you have pinning, we can also introduce fragmentation by design because we can't move the pinned objects, and if we can't fit, you know, just right where, you know, the pinned object starts, then obviously we have to leave that space, you know, unused, which means we need to make a free object out of it so we can actually walk the heap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've kind of shown, you know, how much memory is in the heaps, that there is 3 generations,
mm-hmm.
and the, what object, you can actually find out where an object, which generation it's in.
Mm-hmm.
What else can you kind of use to summarize the memory footprint?
So there's a command called heapstat. Let's see. So... it's a very simple heap because I have one heap.
Yeah.
So, but if you got server GC, you could see a long list. So heapstat is actually convenient. It's also an SOS command. It's a convenient way to tell you that, you know, how much is in each generation and how much free space is in each generation. Because, you know, the amount of free space is something that people usually care about, right? So then you get a nice percentage. So you say, like, my small object heap is 35% fragmented, and my large object heap is 0 fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is too small to make it, to make up into 1%, so it's 0. So I would also like to point out that, you know, you should interpret this result with caution, right? You shouldn't be, like, sometimes when you see, like, the small object heap, the percentage is high, so we're taking the percentage here over the whole 3 generations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So fragmentation in different generations actually means different things. So if I have fragmentation in Gen 2, that's not really something that the users can do much about, right? Because you know, you can't intercept when GC is doing a Gen 1, GC is promoting stuff into Gen 2, right? But if my fragmentation is in Gen 1, that usually means that it's user actionable. Because when we leave stuff in Gen 0, when we leave stuff in Gen 0, it's because of pinning. Mm-hmm. So when you pin something, if we do the same thing as we otherwise would, which is, you know, after GC, Gen 0 is always empty, right? You start fresh, you get to allocate a bunch of objects in Gen 0. The problem arises when you have these pinned objects that GC cannot move, and it needs to make free space in between them, right? Because I still need to make the heap walkable. But these free spaces are actually in Gen 1, and they would only be used when you do a Gen 0 GC, right?
Okay.
So what we do is, you know, we don't want to wait that long. We want to say, like, especially, you know, if your pinned objects are there for a long time, it's really not good because you just keep extending the heap, right? And that's no good. So what we say is we actually will allow you to allocate, you know, user code to allocate in the free space in between the pinned objects that we intentionally leave in Gen 0. So fragmentation in Gen 0 in that case, I mean, you could say like, oh, actually these objects, you know, either they should not be pinned or they should not be pinned for that long. Right, that's something that people often do discover, right? They say, like, I don't think these pinned objects should live that long, and then they discover that it's something they can fix. But, you know, if you're okay with having a heap that's sort of extended, I like to call it extended because, you know, much of it is made up with the free objects, right? Mm-hmm. And then when you let the user threads run, they would allocate in these, right? So that part of the fragmentation is actually okay. Right, so sometimes when you look at a heap, you see like, oh, I got, you know, 30 megs in Gen 0, like the size of Gen 0, 30 megs, and right after GC, the fragmentation ratio of Gen 0 is like 99%, which means like most of it is just fragmentation, and that's okay. Like if I allocate, you know, about 30 megs, next time, you know, I let my user threads run, and I would trigger another GC, and I get into the same situation, that's really no problem, right?
It just means normal churn is happening. It's really good.
Exactly, right. So that's actually intentional, and that's user actionable if you want to act on it. So I would say, like, you know, different fragmentation really means different things for different generations.
Cool. Well, I think we've covered what we can see in a dump file. Let's talk about routing and pinning and all that stuff in another episode.
Okay.
And leave it there.
All right. It's a show for this week. If you have questions, defragtools@microsoft.com, or you can leave us a comment in the show page and we'll get back to you there. Thanks for watching.
Have a week.
Thank you.